Hello and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
No.
I'm really? Not, but he is my favorite conservative.
Thank you.
So this is our second consecutive show without polls. Yay! I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah, I will agree with that. Now, while I actually do enjoy watching, you know, the weekly moving polls in the presidential election and the
Most
Senate and everything
wrong.
Else. Yeah, it is nice to get a break from them for, I'm going to say at least, 6 months? Because midterms will be coming up before we know it.
Midterms are 2 years away.
I said 6 months. So in 6 months, they're going to be a year and a half away.
Okay, we are not going to do...
Oh, we're going to do like...
No, we are not going to do nonstop polls for another year. We're not. All right. So forgetting the polls. Edward, my favorite conservative.
Yes.
What are we talking about today?
Today, well, I actually was thinking about talking about pardons because everybody was all pissed off about Joe and, you know, the Hunter Biden pardon.
Okay, just was anyone shocked? No.
No, not at all. But I thought, you know what? We still got, 7 weeks of Joe Biden's administration, and there's going to be a lot more unfolding in that regard. You know, he's going to try to issue some pardons that are so unconstitutional. This will be, you know, grab the popcorn.
And also everyone was talking about pardons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It might be a little different.
Yeah. We wanted to talk about something that maybe not everybody's talking about.
All right. So today the word is Doge.
All right.
Like the password. The password is Doge. Remember that? Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, President Trump has vowed to cut federal spending and reduce the size of government. So he created Doge.
The Department of Government Efficiency. Which is not an actual department. Let's just make that clear.
That is correct. It is not an official government department. That type of body it has to be established by Congress. And it typically, you know, employs thousands.
And that's right. What Doge is trying to eliminate.
Right.
These huge bureaucracies with bloated staff.
Yeah, absolutely right. Doge, it's going to operate as an advisory board run by two of Trump's closest allies, Elon Musk, who's also known as the first buddy.
I
thought that was great,
that.
Right? Yeah, this is the first buddy over here. And Vivek, rhymes with cake, Ramaswamy. And it's believed, you know, they're going to have a direct line into the White House. Now, I do find it interesting that they call it Doge because Elon Musk is heavily involved and invested in a cryptocurrency.
I knew you were gonna say crypto.
Called Dogecoin.
Oh god.
Oh yeah. So
well,
it's
probably
a,
came up with the name.
It's like a perfect tie-in. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I feel like this is a rhetorical question, but instead of making a rhetorical question, I'm gonna say, let's talk about why we need Doge. Like, why is this so important? And just I will say in my own life and my own work and company. Mm-hmm. Efficiency is very, very important to me. Like I drill it into my employees that we have to be effective, but also efficient. So why do we need it, Edward?
Yeah, well, the oxymoron of government efficiency, right? Which says those two don't go together at all. Well, let's look at it this way. We are $36 trillion in debt.
Oh, Lord.
So obviously congressional restraint and oversight is not working. I've got an example for you, very tiny but symptomatic example of government waste.
And he picked the example that upsets me the most,
yeah.
By far. Like,
yeah. Do you want to read it?
Yes. Can't wait. And thank you so much. We see you watching live, and feel free to comment in real time. We can see your comments on YouTube and LinkedIn. Not sure we can see them in real time on Rumble, X, or Facebook, but we can on the other two. So please feel free to comment if you so dare or desire. So example of government waste. In 2023, the National Institutes of Health, or NIH, spent, get ready for it, people. You think I'm going to say research? No. $759 million on workforce diversity and outreach. And $611,000 on evaluating microaggressions among Latinx individuals with obesity.
A with obesity.
With obesity.
Not in shape, Latinx.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, anyway, let me continue. Okay. So when I think NIH, and I'm in this space, as many of you know, I think research, you know, medical breakthroughs, you know, I mean, I very much support that. Evaluating microaggressions among Latinx individuals with obesity. First of all, everybody I know who's Latino thinks Latinx is ridiculous. Yes. Okay. So let's just put that out there.
No Latino has ever said Latinx.
I know. Right. Well, there's a few in Congress, but, I'm all for evaluating obesity, evaluating Latinos with obesity, but this whole microaggressions, NIH is about health. Okay. It's not about society. You know, there's research money elsewhere for evaluating microaggressions.
Yeah. Over $600,000 for microaggressions.
I can't.
On obese Latinx. Yes. That's just, yeah.
All right. So
blows my mind.
Right. That is a micro example, yes, of why DOGE is needed. Now, Edward, has anything like DOGE ever been tried before?
Actually, yes, it has indeed.
Oh, right.
In 1982, the great Ronald Reagan set up what was called the Private Sector Survey on Cost Controls, or the PSSCC.
Or as I call it, the PSCC.
Yes. However, it's commonly referred to as the Grace Commission, to rid the federal government of billions of dollars of waste. And the chairman of that commission was J. Peter Grace, who was a wealthy businessman. Does that sound familiar? A wealthy businessman running something to cut costs?
Oh, yes, that part does. I thought you were going to ask if this Peter Grace guy sounded familiar, and I was going to remind you that I was 10 years old in 1982, so no.
No, well, Grace was actually the scion of the W.R. Grace fortune. They are a monstrous chemical company. I think they were bought a couple of years ago, but they're still
Again, I was a child
business.
At the time. Yeah. So what happened with the Grace Commission?
Well, Reagan asked the members of the commission to, quote, be bold. We want your team to work like tireless bloodhounds. Don't leave any stone unturned in your search to root out inefficiency.
So did it succeed? I feel like if it had,
you might know about it.
I might know more about it.
We wouldn't be $36 trillion in debt.
Yes. And I might've learned about it in history, but did it succeed?
It actually did have some small successes, but overall lawmakers just didn't have the stomach to make the cuts that were recommended by the commission.
But that sounds like what would happen today. I mean, I have been saying for years, for example, we need to raise the retirement age. We just do. And even Trump doesn't want to do that. So is there anything else that Trump could do to actually enact DOGE's, boy, that's hard to say, eventual recommendations?
Well, yeah. He could use what's called impoundment.
And I take it you don't mean impounding my car.
Correct.
Which
yes.
A
yes.
Lot.
You never heard of that, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. So what is impoundment and how does it work?
Okay. The Constitution, if we all know, gives the power of the purse to Congress, right? So Congress, all spending
money
has to originate in the House. It goes through Congress. But the president is in charge of executing the law. So they pass the laws. The president has to execute it. So impoundment occurs when a president decides he doesn't want to spend that money that Congress has given to him for a certain project.
Okay.
So he can just say.
So he's like, yeah, I don't think so.
Right.
So has impoundment been used in the past?
It has. It has actually. You know, the history of it actually starts way back in 1803 with Thomas Jefferson.
Our third president. Yes.
This was right before the Louisiana Purchase, where we bought all of these millions of acres, or I think 800,000 acres of the country that became most of the Midwest. And back in that time, there was, a lot of strife with the French at that time. And Congress authorized this money to be used to buy gunships to protect New Orleans and the Mississippi River. Jefferson said, no, I'm going to work this out. I'm going to negotiate with them. I'm not going to spend the money. And that's how we actually got the Louisiana Purchase. So they didn't spend the money. So that was like the first time it was ever used.
Okay. So I just want to recap for people, because we had some people just join us. So basically, Congress said, we want to use this money to defend New Orleans. And Jefferson used impoundment and said, no, we're going to use this money. And we're just going to flat out buy this land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He said, we don't need to spend it. So.
All right. So has it been used since?
Yeah, then? It has. However, in 1972, when I believe you were born.
Thanks for outing me, but I already did. So, yeah.
Okay. It was deemed that Richard Nixon abused impoundment. So Congress passed the Impoundment Control Act of 1974. And it basically says that if the president uses impoundment and Congress does not approve the president's request not to spend those funds within 45 days of receiving it, then the funds must be spent. So if Congress says, here's the money, dole it out, you're the executive, do that. The president says, no, I'm cool, we don't need to spend it. By law now, he or she, the president, has to request from Congress to rule in his favor on the impoundment. And most of the time it doesn't go his way. But this is actually, this whole Impoundment Control Act of 1974 is where we got the Congressional Budget Office from, the CBO.
They formed
that along with this in order to keep more checks and balances between the executive and the legislative.
Can you give a very recent example?
I can. Our current, well, I'm guessing current president.
Yeah, we don't know who
Joe Biden
really running the country,
yes, Joe,
but on paper.
Yeah, Congress actually authorized to spend money for aid to Israel. And Joe Biden said, no, I'm not going to send the money. So that's one that I'm not sure how it has actually worked out. But yeah, every president has done it in some little form or another. Richard Nixon just took it to a different level.
He took everything to a different
level. He did indeed, yeah. I'm not a crook.
Yes. Nixon, if you hadn't been so paranoid and recorded every conversation.
That's true.
All right, so if Democrats or Congress in general try to block Trump, what can he do? What is his recourse? Can he take it to the Supreme Court? I mean, because that's probably going to happen.
Yeah, that's actually what the Democrats are more afraid of right now, because recently in the past year here, the Supreme Court ruled on what's called Chevron deference. And it showed that it believed that government agencies had overstepped their authorities by, you know, imposing fines and jail time to people when there weren't actual laws on the books. So I think the Democrats are worried that this will be the next step into possibly approving more of a liberal impoundment process.
Okay. I think I got all that. Hopefully the people watching did too. All right. So again, we are live streaming and we can see your comments in real time on YouTube and LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. So be brave, go ahead and comment in real time. You can use a pseudonym. We don't care. So let's go down south and let's talk about another leader who has really shaken things up and who also has big hair. So Javier Milei in Argentina is having some great success. How is he doing it?
Okay, you said go south. I thought you were talking like Florida or something. No, we're going way,
way south.
We're going way south
of America. I should have been, yes.
Yeah, right. So Javier Milei, yeah. I mean, it's very interesting what's going on because the U.S. and Argentina have very similar government structures. They really do. The president, they have the same Congress that we have. They have a Supreme Court. So it's very interesting. So what Milei, who is actually an economist, which kind of helps to understand the economy, right?
Yeah.
The first thing he did when he came into office, he brought the chainsaw with him and he cut the number of government ministries, they call them down there. So think cabinet agencies here,
right,
from 18 ministries to 9, just like that.
Wow.
Just like that. And by cutting all these federal jobs and these agencies, he has reduced inflation down there from 25% to 2.5% in less than a year.
That's insane.
It just shows you how much waste there is, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. Also, just the inflation. I mean, I think that's why he was elected, was 25%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is the reason I believe Trump was elected. That's the kind of bold leadership people want to see. You can say a lot of negative things about Trump, a lot of negative things, okay? But you can't say he's a coward. He is not afraid to be bold. Like, let's not forget when this guy was almost killed the first time, in Butler, Pennsylvania, he wanted to get back up and the Secret Service people were not going to let him. And he did. And he got back up and blood is dripping down his face. And he said, fight, fight, fight. So he's not afraid. So let's go back to Doge. I've read that they want to cut $2 trillion from the federal budget, which is, which to me sounds like a lot, but you know, when you go back to how much it is that really doable?
I hope, I wish, I'm not sure. Okay. Let's look at federal spending.
Okay.
So in 2024, we spent about $6.5 trillion, give or take.
That's all.
Right. Now let's look at it though. In 2019, before COVID,
right,
we spent $4.4 trillion on our budget. So
which is still crazy, people.
Yeah, we went from 4.4 to 6.5.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Please do.
All right. So 20 years ago, what was the budget? $1-2 trillion tops?
Yeah, I would think so.
And that was fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and everything.
Yeah, I'm sure we had spikes in there, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it was single-digit trillion. Anyway, so... Yeah, it was very low. Okay, so let's tell us where this $6.5 trillion went.
So our budget, since we're looking at, can we cut $2 trillion out of it?
Is
so,
it possible?
Right. So of that $6.5 trillion, we have to spend $3.8 trillion of it to pay Social Security, Medicare, and veterans benefits. That is untouchable. By law, that's untouchable. Those have to be funded. Right?
Okay.
So that's already 3.8 out of the 6.5 is gone. We've got to spend now $1 trillion just to service the debt, to pay the interest on our debt every year.
That is insanity, yeah. People. That is insane.
Think about that. So that leaves us $1.7 trillion for everything else.
What they call discretionary
spending. Discretionary spending. Yes. Of which, of that $1.7 trillion, over $800 billion of it, meaning almost half of it, goes to national defense, goes to the military.
Yes. So I think there could be some cuts there. I really do.
There can be. There can be. There's a lot of, you know, some of those, you know, departments that we talk about, there is tons of waste involved in all of that. And, you know, that's, I've heard it so many years, you know, year after year after year, we're just going to cut government waste. And it's like, nobody ever does. So, gosh, I hope they do. But, you know, the problem is obviously Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I mean, it's going to be a tough sell for Trump because right now the House majority for the Republicans is 5 seats. And that's actually going to go down to 2 seats very shortly because 3 of those House members, one's resigning and 2 others are now taking jobs in the administration.
Yeah, stop picking off people.
Right. So what happens is those seats are going to be vacant until those states and those congressional districts hold special elections.
Right.
So you're going to have a 1-vote lead in the Senate or in the House, excuse me. We've got 3 votes in the Senate, kind of, because Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Susan Collins of Maine are never reliable.
Yeah. They
never reliable. Yes. So it's going to be tough. I think Donald Trump needs to channel his inner LBJ.
I know what you mean by that, but would you tell everybody else?
Lyndon Baines Johnson. Johnson was
a bully.
He was a bully. He was a very big man, tall man like Trump, you know, 6'3", 6'4". And when he wanted legislation to pass, he would call in congressional members to the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And he would either like walk right up to him, basically touching chest and look down at him. Or he'd have him sit in the chair, he'd grab another chair, and he'd pull it right up where their knees were touching and would basically intimidate them. And I think what Trump needs to do is any of these squishes that are out there, he needs to bring them in. And I know there's so many of these people that are worried that they're going to lose their seats, right, if they vote for this. Trump needs to tell them flat out, yeah, you're going to lose your seat because I will make sure that you get primaried and I will do everything in my power to help your primary opponent. And so they're going to be like, well, hell, I got to at least get the nomination to run.
Right. Yeah, so, that's true.
Yeah. So Trump just has to really just put the screws to him.
I mean, you can say what you want about LBJ. And just as a reminder to our younger viewers, he was a Democrat. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, but he knew how to, I don't want to say manipulate people, but certainly negotiate.
To bully them,
yes,
too. Yeah.
To bully them. Yes, he did. Yeah,
for sure.
All right. So how many employees will Doge have and what will be their salaries?
Well, that's a very interesting question.
I know it is. Here it comes.
I have no idea how many people are going to work for Doge.
Yes, but
no clue.
Tell us what we know.
Their salaries. Okay. So let's look back. Elon Musk and Vivek, they met with lawmakers just the other day, this past Thursday. And Elon Musk posts on X right afterward, and it says, we need super high-Q, small government revolutionaries willing to work 80-plus hour weeks on unglamorous cost-cutting. Indeed, this will be tedious work, make lots of enemies, and compensation is zero. What a great deal.
Okay, so I just want to jump in here. When I heard about this, I was like, who would do this job? I think this is where Elon Musk is so freaking out of touch. He is the richest man in the world. Vivek, by comparison, is poor, is
yeah,
dirt. But Vivek is a billionaire, yeah. 1 billion.
Yeah, Vivek has one.
One. And Elon has whatever, 300.
343
billion.
Billion, right. Yes.
Again, on paper, but still.
Yeah.
And what I liked about the first part of this, and I just want to highlight it again, we need super high IQ, love it. Small government revolutionaries, love it. 80 hours a week, being very honest about the work involved. But and this is only going to be for 18 months or so. And unglamorous cost cutting. Love, 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 love. And tedious work. I mean, I love the honesty. You're going to make enemies. Love it. Mm-hmm. Compensation zero. There are not very many people who... and this is where you and I were disagreeing pre-show, that fall into this category. Who, there are people who will fall into the first part, you know, but there aren't very many people, unless they are retired and have the energy and wherewithal and desire to work 80 hours a week and don't need the money. I don't understand. I'm not saying paying crazy salaries, but I don't understand not paying these people for this short-term position a salary. I really don't get it. Who is going to do this?
Okay. Here's what I think is going to happen.
Okay.
And I haven't told you this, by the way.
No, he has not.
So
it's always a surprise.
I think Elon is going to say, Vivek and I are working for zero, right?
Well, right.
Just
yes.
Like Trump. Trump doesn't take a salary.
Right.
By the way, Joe Biden does.
No. Actually, by law, he has to. He takes a dollar.
Yes. Joe Biden
takes
a dollar.
By law, the president has to take a salary.
Right. So I think it will not surprise me, let me say that, if Elon just says, you know what, I'm going to pick up the tab for these salaries for these people because this is just too important to do. And I think that's
well. That would make sense.
Yeah.
So
I can see something like that happening.
And even though I don't want you living in Washington, I would nominate you for this job.
Yay!
I would.
Well, it said high IQ, so.
Oh my God! Please.
Oh wait, super high IQ. All right, I'm in.
Yeah, you're in. But no, you are willing to work hard. Again, I don't like really want you in DC, but okay. You're willing to work hard. And so, yeah, Elon, there's got to be some compensation for my man here, but he would be amazing at it. And you're certainly not worried about making enemies because we have the show. So.
That's true. Yeah. So, more is going to be coming out here over the next few weeks. They're kind of still figuring out how to set it up and everything else. And we'll obviously keep everyone informed.
Right. Finish off Doge with he's not going to get any federal employees to sign up.
Why not?
You know, long hours, low pay. Yeah, it's kind of the antithesis of a federal job, right?
It is.
Even though they're pretty cushy.
Yes.
They're hard to get, but once you get them, you're in. All right. So are you going to take us to?
Yeah, that actually segues perfectly into our weekend WTF.
I'm just going to say it. What the fuck?
Okay.
All right. Give it to us.
All right. This is from our friend Streif. At redstate.com.
Love red state.
Love the state.
Hello, Jennifer. Okay.
Headline: A sweetheart union deal underlines the fact that only 6% of federal workers work full-time.
Okay, go on.
Oof. Okay, from the article. In the fading hours of arguably the worst administration since Herbert Hoover, Joe Biden's Social Security Commissioner, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, signed a 5-year contract with the American Federation of Government Employees, guaranteeing continued work from home or telework for up to 4 days per week for the agency's workers. Outside of some finding of malfeasance that could lead to a court voiding it, the Trump administration is now stuck with this stinker of a deal. It's just the kind of chicken poo move. I love chicken poo.
That's funny.
That wouldn't surprise anyone who's lived through O'Malley's 2 terms as in Maryland State House. However, a new report by Iowa Senator Joni Ernst details just how the system is abused. And from the report, it says a paltry 6% of the federal workforce, quote, report in person on a full-time basis, while almost 1/3 of federal workers are remote on a full-time basis, in a sharp turnaround from the pre-pandemic era in which only 3% teleworked daily. So now we're up to, at least 1/3 working remotely.
Yeah, so I think this, I will say this article is misleading because the title of the article, and this is where I'm pushing back and we have different views, is it says 6% of federal workers work full time. That is not accurate. 6% work full time in person.
Yeah, go into an office.
Into an office while approximately 1/3 work full time remotely. So I think the real headline here is, 66%, 2/3 of federal workers don't work full time and don't go in the office and don't do anything. I mean, I think they kind of buried the lead a little bit and it was a little bit misleading. And I know what you said pre-show, I don't have a problem with remote work. My entire team is remote. Mm-hmm. And do you want to share what you said?
Well, yeah, because you are in the private sector and you are motivated. You work your ass off, 7 days a week. She's in her home office working, right? And people that actually want to make a profit, and even though you have a nonprofit, but
yeah, you still have to be profitable.
Yeah. They're motivated to get things done because usually a lot of times their compensation relies on it, that sort of thing.
That's true.
Government employees, by their nature, are lazy.
Not all of them.
No, but the vast majority that we see. And putting someone like that in a remote work area, you're just asking for less productivity. Plus, we've got thousands of government buildings that are basically vacant, and DOGE is actually going to go after that.
Could definitely be turned around.
So, yeah.
Misleading.
I think what kind of pisses me off, though, the whole thing on this is that Martin O'Malley is leaving the governorship, to be a senator and he's Social Security Commissioner, but he, at the last second, now burdens the next administration coming in and making it easier for all these federal workers to work from home when that's exactly the opposite.
Well, but if DOGE does their job, then a lot of these jobs won't exist anymore.
We certainly can hope. Yes.
Right. All right, moving on.
Yeah, I'm going to double dip here.
We have This Week in Wins.
It is. This is a real quickie because this is just breaking this morning. We're Sunday at noonish here. From Bassam Marouk and Zaina Karam at the Associated Press, headline, Syrian government falls in stunning end to 50-year rule of Assad family.
Woo!
And just one quick little paragraph, the Syrian government fell early Sunday in a stunning end to the 50-year rule of the Assad family after a sudden rebel offensive sprinted across government-held territory and entered the capital in 10 days. So, the reason I put this in the Week in Wins is we're getting rid of a butcher in Syria in the Assad family. Again, they've ruled for 50 years. They've gassed their own people. They are horrible, horrible, leaders, if you can even call them that.
Do you know if we are somehow involved with this rebel offensive?
I do not. I have not heard
anything. Because we tend to get involved in other people's problems.
It is, but I think one of the main reasons that this actually occurred is when Israel has been fighting back so hard against Hezbollah, and this has given pause to Iran, and also with all the losses that Russia has suffered in the Ukraine war, they're just not going to be there to help Assad. They just don't have the resources anymore. Hezbollah's, you know, they're killing them, like, you know, going out of style or going out of business here. So there's just not the support that the Assad family had in the past. My problem with all of this, though, is who's going to take over?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is this another, what was that in Iraq where, you know, the JV team, as Obama called them, ISIS took over. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right. So.
And we have a barking dog, so please disregard.
She's very protective. Okay. We are going to move on to our favorite segment and cornerstone segment, This Week in Woke, from our friend Jennifer Van Laar at redstate.com. And the title of the article is Free Palestine Supporter Shoots Two Kindergartners at California Christian School, Where's Newsom's Outrage? And yeah, you heard right, kindergartners. So on Wednesday, a 56-year-old white man entered a school in Northern California with a ghost gun and then shot and critically injured two kindergartners before killing himself on the playground. So just let that sink in for a moment, that he shot these two children and then shot himself, which these kids witnessed. For some reason, though, you're not seeing videos of Governor Gavin Newsom everywhere talking about the need for common sense gun control laws and finger wagging. Elias Wolford, age 5, and Roman Mendez, age 6, were shot. Our prayers and condolences are with the family. Elias was shot once in the abdomen. Roman was shot twice. Both boys are in critical conditions with internal injuries. As of right now, they're expected to eventually fully recover, but it's going to be a long recovery. Yeah. The shooter, whose name I refuse to say, is a convicted felon, so he should have not had access to a firearm under current state and federal laws. And he also used, as we mentioned, a ghost gun. And if you don't know what that is, it's an unserialized firearm, according to reports, which is illegal. I mean, so just stack up the ways that this man should never have had a gun. So, you know, is it possible from the article that Newsom didn't mention strengthening so-called gun safety laws because he had an aha moment and realized that criminals don't follow laws?
Doubtful.
And again, this is from the article, and it just, I get very emotional. It just breaks my heart. The more likely reason is that the school the shooter targeted, Feather River School of Seventh-day
Adventist,
I always get that wrong. It's a private Christian school. And his motive was retribution against the United States for, quote, and this is from the shooter's memo, you know, online activity, genocide and oppression of Palestinians, along with attacks towards Yemen. Really?
Yeah.
What? This is why, you know what? This is not a woke, babe. I think this could have been our WTF. But
well, yeah, I actually had it up there, and then
you moved
it down.
You
to,
moved
to this.
It.
Yeah.
This is the what the fuck.
This is a little more to the story that I was
this
reading this
awful.
Morning.
This is awful.
The shooter actually scheduled an interview with the principal, saying on, you know, a ruse that he wanted to enroll his granddaughter at the school. So he goes to the school, meets with the principal, BS's her.
Gets familiar with the layout.
And as he's walking out, pulls out a gun.
Oh, okay.
And shoots these kids on the playground. So how many kids are on the playground, right? Starts shooting the children on the playground. And to me, what's incredibly pissing me off is the rap sheet this guy has is, you know, the old as long as your arm. And they're serious offenses too. And he's not in jail serving time at all. You know, that to me is should be, you know, noted in here. Why is this guy even out walking the streets? Because of their liberal policies on criminals. And it's just, and again, if you want to reverse this around, and this white guy goes and shoots at a Muslim school, this would be everywhere. It would be 24/7. They would have helicopters and you name it, 24/7 on this school. So, you know, hope you're proud of yourself, Gavin Newsom.
And again, our hearts go out to Elias Wolford and Rowan Mendez's families. Yeah. And we hope that the little boys heal soon. And so tragic. I mean, just absolutely tragic. I don't think Newsom gives a shit about anybody. I really
don't. Oh, he does.
You know.
Himself.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, I was excluding himself. Yes. Right. All right. On that really fun and happy
Sorry
note.
To bring you down there, people.
Sorry. Yeah. thank you so much. We see that you've been watching live and you've stayed with us. We really, really appreciate it. So please be sure to follow us on social media platforms and join us live every Sunday this month, actually, at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern. We stream live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, available wherever you're listening right now. So we go live on Sundays, and the podcast always drops Monday morning. And you can support our show. Please remember, people, this is a side hustle and a hobby. This is not our jobs. You can support our show. And well, unless you go work for Doge, and that could be really interesting. You can support our show by joining our locals community. All of that is in the show notes. And you can always learn more and follow us and reach out at myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show. And I just want to wrap us up by saying that we get feedback on this show privately a lot.
Yeah.
In email, through our website. Sometimes it's people who know me personally. And I understand. I understand that you're afraid to comment in real time. I understand you're afraid to subscribe. I understand that you're afraid to leave us a review. But please stand up. I mean, stand up and do it. And I just want to remind people, when you leave a review on Apple, you can create a pseudonym. So, you know, you can just create a pseudonym. Doesn't have to be your name to leave a review on any Apple podcast. So just a reminder to that. But we need you to stand up and speak your truth.
All right. Don't be afraid. Yes.
Yes.
Boldness like Doge.
Yeah. See? I like that.
Full circle.
Oh, very nice.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.